get ready for uncensored sports madness. It's Dave in the City on Lux of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Lux of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play.
And it comes time. We know how Lincoln dies. You know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they are showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic chanting USA.
Actually, this Paul Davis a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
You know what? Puts the WGCs in a Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major fight. So chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just MMA. And
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a body shot off her, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Lux of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big Wednesday show from Santa Monica, the courtesy of blogtalkradio.com. Glad to be back here after a week off. Glad you're still with us. We will be joined by a number of guests tonight, including an unknown quantity in the random questions hour. Kevin on the Cape could not make it with us last week. He was out due to sickness. And so we just decided, all right, let's just give it another week. So it is 1 week later, and Kevin is still a little under the weather, so we decided we'll manage okay on this particular week. It won't be the same without the Jugman, but hopefully we can get, if he cannot make it tonight in random questions at 11 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific, we hope you can help us contribute to a good random cues hour. And you can call us too at 424-258-9251 to give us your questions or other ideas that you had on your mind. It'll be a lot of fun. So that's in hour two. Hour one, we'll be joined by the man they call Pitch and Catch, Robert in Virginia, provided that he's not still seething from the Rangers game tonight at the bottom of the hour. And in at the top of the hour is our first guest who joins us now, Chris in Syracuse. And you know what that means. It means college basketball is really starting to take shape. So, We now introduce Mr. Chris in Syracuse on the program. How's it going, Chris?
Good, Vid. Glad to be back on the show. Ready to talk some basketball.
Yeah, we've got there's a lot to talk about this year. It's been quite a lot of storylines, and I think what we will focus on this week. This will be the first of two college basketball updates. The second one a week from now, same time, and we'll do the smaller conferences this week. And the bigger ones next week, because the conference tournaments usually line up that way. So let's get right to it. Before we even get to call it the smaller conference tournaments, let's review the regular season. The first thing you think about when you think about the season that was, there's actually a couple of things I wanted to talk about. From the beginning, the big hype was about Andrew Wiggins on Kansas and Jabari Parker over on Duke. Now, I think you can say that both players have panned out, but considering how much hype he had, I'm a little surprised that Andrew Wiggins did not become the slam dunk that everyone perceived. But Jabari Parker looks like he's more game ready for the NBA. So between the two, who do you feel like has had a bigger impact in basketball this season?
I think it's Parker. He's a physical specimen, whereas Wiggins, I don't think he's physical enough. I just think he's too small and skinny. I think he's getting it in gear a little bit, going to the hoop some more. He's hit some big shots. He's a fantastic player. But is he the best thing to ever come into college basketball? No, he's not. And if you're going to talk like that, I would say that not only has Parker made a bigger impact, but I would say that Tyler Ennis up here has made a larger impact. And you could make, I know, just based on his game, and another physical specimen is Julius Randle. I know that clown car program that they got going in Lexington right now is just absurd. But I mean, he's good. He's good, and he's going to play in the league for many years.
Right.
And I think some team will be glad to have him.
Oh yeah, I mean he's a big player. He's a big player physically. He's a big time player too. He can score. Guy's pretty good. You know, there's even a guy on Wiggins' own team that's had a bigger impact in basketball this season. That's Joel Embiid. I mean, he's been terrific in the paint. I know you're a big fan of his. Tell us a little bit more about what he's brought to the table.
Just being a force inside, he's a little banged up right now, and that would make you question how he's holding up now, you know, how he's going to hold up in an 82-game season playing back-to-backs and every other night, I guess. But I've heard some people say, I'm not quite sure I'm on the bandwagon this much, but saying no matter what your team's situation is at center, you pick Joel Embiid first in the draft. I don't know quite about all that, but he's a legitimate inside five. You know what I mean?
And right.
That can be a little bit rare. Randle, kind of more of a four. And you know how the NBA values the big man in the middle.
Well, maybe not so much as they used to, but interior presence is a huge asset in the NBA if they can get it. Just hasn't been around. I mean, just it's hard to find those players. That's why, like you said, he's going to be an extra valued prospect, assuming good health.
I think I think if they're trying to get him healthy now, they're resting him as much as they can and trying to get him ready to go. And I think if they want to go far, they're going to need him. I mean, they have other good pieces, but I don't know how far they go without him.
Right. Okay, so we'll earmark that conversation for further reference next week when we talk about the big conferences and Kansas. Although I would be interested to know whether you think that they'd be capable of a one seed at this point. If they went out in the tournament in the Big 12, do they get the one seed?
Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Yeah, I felt so too. I just was wondering, you know, you've seen a lot more games than I have this year of Kansas. So I was just checking to make sure. Okay, so now let's get to the regular season in review. Now, we talk about some of the big teams that were hyped. I think Kansas and Duke were definitely among them. They played in a very high-profile game on ESPN, you know, way early in the season. And now you see both teams. And, you know, here they are, and I think Kansas did its job, although they had their bad losses along the way. Duke, on the other hand, doesn't look like they were that good this year. I mean, they looked very vulnerable towards the end of the season. So that's just among the surprises and disappointments we've had this year. So who do you think lived up to expectations, just off the top of your head, of the big hype teams, and who didn't? Who were the big disappointments this year?
Well, in the same token, I think there's a few people who have exceeded expectations.
Yes, yes.
I think number one would be the Virginia Cavaliers.
Oh,
winning
yes.
The ACC.
Oh, it's a great choice, yeah.
What a team that is.
Mm-hmm.
They got their star. They got support players. They play great defense, and they go to the glass. There's really not much to not like about that team. And they've done it right, and they've done it quietly, almost under the radar to win the ACC. I think what they've done is fantastic. And they could be in the running for a one seed, absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. I understand that they're in the rank number 5 at the moment nationally. So they did sneak up on people. They snuck up on me, too. I did not realize when they were going into the weekend that they had a chance to win the regular season ACC. So that's pretty big. They hadn't won an ACC championship on the regular season since 1981, I believe. So it's definitely...
Ralph Sampson did it.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, and that was a big player in those days. literally big. He was a 7-footer. So, yeah, that's big news for Virginia. I think it's pretty awesome. And it's good to see some fresh blood in the ACC. I mean, obviously, the Big East teams that came in, Notre Dame and Pitt and Syracuse, among and maybe some others, all make up some of that new ACC. But to see an old-fashioned ACC team win is kind of cool. And the fact that it is not just Duke and North Carolina again is a big story, too. And it's pretty clear that Virginia would be the better of those of that bunch anyway. I think that, you know, you talk about North Carolina. They've had a really brutal start. They finished strong, yes. But it's still a bit of an inconsistent team, a young team. And I don't know if they're really that great at holding on to leads. I don't even think they have that great a defense. So Virginia probably is the best, most well-rounded of those teams.
And they can't shoot free throws.
Yeah, that's a big
awful
one, too. Yeah. Yes. Oh, you mean North Carolina? Yes.
Over that.
Oh, God, it's bad. You're all right. Oh, man. Very true. And, you know, people can say it's not that big a deal, but then when you get to tight games, it kills you. It killed Memphis years and years ago against Kansas in the national title game. It kills teams. You have to make your free throws in college basketball.
Well, if we want to talk about exceeding, meeting, not meeting expectations, I would have to say the SEC as a whole went way in the shitter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's looking like a two-bid league. Maybe, well, now they're talking three, maybe four, but only two are any kind of guarantee. And that would be the aforementioned Kentucky Wildcats, and a team that I think has at least met, if not exceeded, expectations. I mean, they're the number one team in the country right now, is the Florida Gators. Now, I'm looking back at what I picked on the preview show right now. I picked Kentucky 1, Florida 2. I don't think it was terrible. I can defend it by saying, you know, nobody knew what the deal was with Scotty Wilbekin. He was suspended or out, and didn't know when or if he'd be coming back. But that team has come together. They have Michael Frazier is a fantastic outside shooter. He hit 11 last night, 11 for 18 from deep. He had 37 points. It was a close game it was a 2-point game at the half with South Carolina coming off a big win at Kentucky, which I mean should show you how deep a shit Kentucky's in. But it was a 2-point game at half, and they won by about, and the Gators won by about 30 because they kept finding him. I mean, you might want to put a hand in his face, but they did keep finding him.
No doubt. I mean,
but aside from those two teams in that league, it's now Arkansas came out of almost nowhere and have had some nice wins. They swept Kentucky. They have one or two other good wins. Now people are projecting Tennessee over them. But I've seen Tennessee play recently, and they're a disappointing team to me. I thought they should have been able to, at this point, they should have been locks for the dance. But they're not. They're on the edge at best. And now the computer rankings and the stats might, they say with strength of schedule and RPI and all of this and the good wins that Tennessee is the better team rather than Arkansas. But, man, when I watched him, I know what team I would want to see in the tournament, and it's Arkansas.
Yeah,
because they play hard and they take advantage of opportunities. Tennessee had two great opportunities in 1 week. It was about 2 weeks ago where they played Florida good until down the stretch, and they were up on Kentucky down the stretch, and they just let it get away. And I'd rather see the team that rises like the Phoenix to those kinds of scenarios, and that would be the Razorbacks.
Right.
Missouri Clowns, coached by a clown.
Right.
They still have them on the bubble, but I don't see it happening.
I don't think you can really expect Missouri to make the tournament. That's kind of about unrealistic at this point. So how about the Big Ten? Isn't that a little bit of a disappointment too?
No, I would say the Big Ten. I would say the Big Ten is solid. It's kind of right where it should be. People maybe thought it'd be number one or number two conference. I think it's the number two conference behind the Big 12. Even though, how can you say the Big 12 is the best conference? Same teams won it for 12 or 140 years in a row, or however many times Kansas has won now.
That's true, though. Kansas is always at the top of that thing.
Dozens of years now, at least. But, I like Wisconsin. They've scored more, not so much lately. They went through a rough patch where they went back to Wisconsin basketball,
right,
which is not putting the ball in the hoop. But other than that, they're a solid two seed. If you looked at their the numbers on them, I think they have like the second or third best strength of schedule, RPI of 4 or something. It's ridiculous what the numbers say on that team.
Right. How about Michigan in that conference? Is Michigan? Do you think Michigan? I think won the regular season Big Ten, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think they could be pretty good run in the tournament?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a run like last year.
Right.
They got guys who can make the shot. If they hadn't Mitch McGarry with them, I'd say definitely yes. I don't think that'd be it. I think everyone would think so. But he went out with the back, and he's just – Stauskas is hot right now, but – I mean, he's a fantastic shooter, but you know how shooters can be. Good today, then next thing you know, they don't hit one for a week.
Right, that's a good segue,
Trevor Cooney, actually. Trevor Cooney, we're looking at you.
I haven't even seen him make a shot in a while, but I'm glad you brought up the point of shooting and outside shooting, because that's a very convenient segue to me, because that transitions us to the topic of Wichita State. They had a great regular season. They finished the year undefeated. They looked very dominant in their wins, but they haven't really played anybody that tough most of the season, especially in conference. So their game is primarily defense, grinding possessions, and shooting three-pointers. I mean, unless you feel differently, that's what I've seen of them this year. The thing is, if you rely on the three-point shot, that is going to be vulnerable in situations when you're not hitting the shots. So I'm interested to know whether you think that this team, which has a lot of its returning starters from last year's tournament run in Wichita State, has the chops to make another deep playoff run.
Well, I think they're just as good as last year. I mean,
right?
There is some luck involved in these things.
Yes.
And
yes.
Only four teams are going to make the Final Four.
Right.
And they're going to have. Last year it was like Wichita State. Oh, wow, what a good story. Now it's more of, you wonder if it's going to weigh on shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be a one or a two seed. You know, you just wonder how they're going to handle being in the spotlight, having the expectation on them.
Yes. Oh, yes. That's a great point.
But one of the reasons I do still like them is because Fred VanVleet, their point guard, I think he's one of the top five point guards in the country. And it always helps to have a good point guard come tournament time.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart with the ball. He doesn't turn it over. He finds the shooters. It's not a 100% outside team. Klay Anthony Early, what I like about him is he's kind of one of those long wing players, and he has the jump shot, but also he can take it off the dribble. He has a jump shot pretty much to keep him honest.
Right.
But I've seen him take it to the rack. What he's going—I mean, he's 6'8". What he's going to do when he goes in there and finds the big trees, we'll see. But I won't discount them because of their point guard play.
Okay, and I think point guards are probably one of, if not the most important positions in a college basketball tournament. So I think that can't be discounted. Now, as far as expectations of being a favorite instead of being an underdog, that's a very different dynamic. And you know, one team that experienced that change, Gonzaga, years and years ago, when they went from being Cinderella to being the big dog, it's a different story, and they don't play the same way when they are the favorite team. So that now takes us to the West Coast Conference Tournament, which should be underway tomorrow. And that takes place in Las Vegas at the Orleans Casino and Resort Arena. It's a little bit off the strip, if in case you're wondering where that is. But this team is going to be the favorite team to win the West Coast Conference in the tournament. The team that might get in their way might be BYU. BYU plays a really fast-paced game. And so it's going to be an interesting dynamic, because I think Gonzaga strikes me as a bit of a slower team. I don't know if but kind of a more of a system sort of an offense, Mark Few's team. It's his strategy, it's his rules. What do you think about the West Coast? I mean, would those also strike you as the two teams to beat?
Yes, they're definitely above the rest of them. St. Mary's just doesn't have it this year. I like Brad Waldo, but that team without Matthew Dellavedova, it's a second-tier team. Everyone else is second tier. I mean, you can watch these teams. You can, the Toreros down in San Diego with Johnny D. Decent teams. Yep. Don't get me wrong, but they should probably just get ready for the NIT because, and I think that's what one of the questions is going to be of this tournament. Now, Gonzaga has beat BYU both times this year, I believe. I'm pretty positive that Gonzaga won both games against BYU. BYU really doesn't have a lot of great wins. They don't have really bad losses either. They've lost, two to Gonzaga, a couple other ones here and there. They beat I think they beat Stanford early in the year. The question is going to be I see it as a possible bid poach, an at-large poach, because if BYU gets to the championship game and wins the auto bid, Gonzaga's going to be a lock no matter what.
I see.
The big question would be, Gonzaga's going in no matter if they win or they lose this tournament. Now, is that going to poach someone's bid if they lose? Because people are talking about BYU as being an outside bubble team, still with work to do. And the question is, if they get to the WCC final and lose to Gonzaga again and what it would do is, just avoid another bad loss on their resume, because Gonzaga isn't a bad loss. Would that be enough? Obviously, any time you say, is it enough, is it not enough, it's relative to what the other teams in like situations do. Whether they get hotter, if they get it. I mean, if Minnesota goes out in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, they're done. It's just not going to happen for them. But if they were to, get to the semis or the finals, I really don't see it happening. But then you would have to, consider them more strongly as an at-large bid. So anytime you say that, it's all relevant, relative to what the other teams are doing. But that would be a question come Selection Sunday if BYU loses in the finals of this tournament. Are they strong enough to get an at-large?
Right. Good question.
But if they were to win the tournament, then I think that's automatically going to take an at-large bid no matter what, because they'd put Gonzaga in.
Right. Yeah, because Gonzaga's not going anywhere. That's a very good point. I mean, they've been a pretty good team all year. They're a vulnerable team, though, this year, I'll tell you. I mean, just from what little I've seen of them, it doesn't seem like they're as strong as they've been in past years. So it's not exactly your father's or your uncle's Gonzaga. So that's a big, big poach possibility. And you mentioned another one off-air in the Horizon Conference. And this is a conference that it seems like the experts have Green Bay winning. It's a funny situation because it's going to be hosted at the Resch Center. That's Green Bay's home court. So if they advance at all in this tournament, they're basically going to have home court advantage for the entire week. That is pretty amazing, and undoubtedly that's going to give them an advantage in this tourney. So who's going to challenge them in this tournament? I know that Valparaiso won last year, but who would be the others to watch in the Horizon League tournament?
Nobody.
Nobody, right?
It is such a down league this year.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the past few years it'd been pretty good, and a lot of it had to do with Detroit being very good, but they graduated so much of their talent. It's kind of barren. I've heard it advanced that if somehow they were to lose that tournament, I don't know whether to possibly their rivals at Wright State, or maybe the other Wisconsin team, the Milwaukee team. I don't see that happening, but I really don't. But just if they had a shadow of a, they might have a shadow of a prayer of an at-large. I mean, the bubble would have to pretty much fall apart. But then again, I think, you know, the earth would have to move and shake for them to lose this tournament. So I don't think, I think it's more interesting to talk about, you know, conjecture and whatever. If they were to go down, I don't think they are. Cleveland State's the number two seed in there. I really don't even know all that much about Cleveland State this year.
Wow, that's saying something. If you don't know that much about them, then that means they're really nondescript. Then you got to really be under the radar. That's true. Wow, Cleveland State. Well,
yeah. So. I really don't see a ton, especially in the smaller conferences, of you know, any strong teams that would warrant, you know, a ton of at large consideration.
Right, right.
If they don't get the job done,
that is true.
I think one of the other.
Very true.
Now you don't know what happens in the big time leagues if somebody maybe, you know, a Minnesota or, you know, team like that that's considered on the bubble were to take a run. I mean, we could talk about the A-10 next week, but I think they're going to get a few teams in, I think, no matter what. But,
right,
you know, that's for next week. One of the other leagues going on right now is the Big South, and I only want to mention it because, you know, partway through this year I was down on myself for picking High Point and buying into the hype, and, you know, I thought that they could not just, you know, dominate, you know, their shitty little league down there, you know, their little conference, but I thought, you know, when they played out of conference at the beginning of the year, I really thought they could hang with teams and, you know, show something. And they got romped, and their transfer from Virginia Tech, Alan Chaney, who was supposed to be a big star, I mean, this isn't anyone's fault. I mean, he got diagnosed with a heart condition, and they advised him to end his basketball career, which you feel for him and all of them when something like that goes down. But they learned how to play without him, and they're probably they won the regular season, they got the one seed in their tournament, and they're probably going to go to the tournament.
So do you think they'll edge out VMI then? Because VMI was said to be another favorite in that particular tournament. Unless High Point and VMI, you know, is that just a little bit too much fluff then? Do you feel like they can edge out VMI in this case?
I really think they can edge out VMI. That pretty much would be their competition.
Right.
I think Charleston Southern won today, but they're not that much. They beat who did they beat? I can't even remember who they beat. I thought might get up there. Mm-hmm. Was it Radford that they beat? Maybe.
Don't worry about it.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
I'm not. But yeah, VMI would be the 2 seed. I think I'd like to see the championship game, but you know, I'd say good recovery to them. Any other ones going on?
Coastal Carolina
Patriot League.
Oh yeah, let me get to the Patriot League, because I like the Patriot League. Because this tournament, unlike many of these small tournaments, because like you basically have said it yourself, most of these little tournaments have one really, really solid, clear, defined favorite that would take really an active nature to really knock them off the pedestal and out of the tourney. But here in the Patriot League, it's pretty wide open. I mean, you're looking at any number of teams. You could talk about American, Boston U, Bucknell. I'm thinking, is there another one here that I may have forgotten?
Bucknell went down tonight.
Did they?
They went down today.
Ah.
Yes, they did.
Wow. So Bucknell's gone.
I believe to Lafayette, but I'm not sure.
Gee, just like that.
But I picked Boston at the beginning of the year, and I might as well stick with it, you know. Continue with the thing. American, who wasn't even really on my radar at the beginning of the year, has done a good job, and I actually hope they meet in the final. Another good final game that I could see coming up would be Robert Morris versus Wagner.
Yes, yes.
Northeast,
they're, right?
Just
yeah.
Getting underway. Yep. I saw Wagner play the other day. I saw him play Bryant. I liked what I saw.
Yes.
But I love the Colonials after what they did last year. You know that.
That's true.
I had them picked one, too. I had Wagner at number one, Robert Morris at number two. So I was, pretty accurate there. But,
that's pretty cool.
I would really like to see them meet up and duke it out. You know, again, they're probably going to be 14, 15 seeds. Probably, maybe even have to play their way in.
The first four or something.
Nonsense. That nonsense.
There's been some success in that first four, though. You remember VCU was a first four team, and they went, I think they went all the way to the Final Four that year.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
so,
no,
I mean, it's an interesting concept.
Winning, yeah.
Right. It makes it around. It makes the game not entirely meaningless. I guess it sort of makes sense anyway. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if you were going to have the one game that they had for years, you might as well make a day of it.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I hear you.
You know, if they were going to play that one game in Dayton, like I said, make a day of it and put some basketball on TV.
Right. Okay. Well.
So I could flip between that and the first round of the NIT.
Oh, man.
Hey, you never know what you're going to see.
You never do. That's really true. That's a very good point. Wow. Well, just like that, it looks like we're out of time tonight. But it looks like we got to pretty much all the leagues we wanted to cover. I mean, this is pretty much the gist of it. Anything else is pretty much, like you said, one-team conferences. So it's a good prelude to next week when we talk about the big conference tournament. So anything else you wanted to just throw in before we go tonight?
Nope. Some good games that I've been flipping through here. Some bubble games. Dayton really needs this game against St. Louis. I don't know if there's enough help for Dayton out there, but they could really use this game. And it's a close one, 50-48 with 12 minutes to go. So I'm going to keep on watching here, and I'll catch up with you later.
All right, sounds good. Thanks again for coming on, Chris. Really a good time to pick your brain with college basketball. Thanks again.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. All right. That's Chris in Syracuse with a college basketball update. And now we switch gears from the basketball landscape to the hockey landscape in the NHL. Today was a trade deadline. Huge number of trades. It might have been the best trade deadline we've seen in the last 12, maybe even 15 years. It really was that exciting. And so, to break it all down, we bring into the program a familiar friend, Robert in Virginia. You remember him from the Football Pick'em podcast. Now he joins us on the show. Robert, welcome. Welcome to board. How's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You betcha. And this is a good time to do it. You know, we've got a lot. It seems like almost everybody in the league was affected by this trade deadline. That usually doesn't happen. Usually it's ancillary deals that don't involve big players at all. Totally different story this year, and it all started way back, like a few days ago, when the Sabres finally unloaded Ryan Miller, their all-star goaltender, U.S. starter in the Olympics, and Steve Ott for Yaroslav Halak, who they just traded today, Chris Stewart, William Carrier, and some draft picks. So we can start there. That was a pretty earth-shattering move. It was probably the right thing to do for both sides, though. I was just thinking about it. I think Halak's pretty good. But taking a guy like Ryan Miller on an already good defensive team, that's really good. That really could put them over the top for the conference. And then on the Buffalo side, I think those draft picks will be good for future rebuilding. So I was interested to pick your brain on this. What did you think of the trade? Do you think it's a winner for both sides?
Yeah, I think everyone involved was a winner. I you know, look, Buffalo's, they're not ready to win anytime soon. And they're not looking to spend a ton of money here while they're rebuilding. So from their standpoint, you know, you unload a contract in Ryan Miller. But, you know, look, Ryan Miller was a great goalie for Buffalo, gave everything he had, you know, for them his whole career. And really what they're doing is they're giving him an opportunity to go somewhere and really compete for a Stanley Cup, you know, toward the end of his career. And I think he deserves that. I think St. Louis was a great spot for him to go to. They're going to play, you know, like you said, great defense in front of him. It's going to be the Western Conference playoffs in the NHL this year are going to be Armageddon. There's just so many great teams out there.
Yep.
And now that St. Louis has Ryan Miller, they've got just as much a chance out West as anyone.
Yeah, they look good. They've been looking good anyway. I mean, they were a strong team. A couple of guys have come into their own. Oshie, we saw him in the Olympics. Backes. I mean, this is a very good team. I think anybody that plays the St. Louis Blues in this Stanley Cup playoffs is going to have a tough series, and it's been that way for a couple of years. All right, let's move on down the line. A couple of in between all the bigger moves, we had some other players moved. Let me get your feel for some of these. Brandon Peary, are you familiar with him? He went from the Blackhawks to the Panthers for picks. Mike Weaver went to the Canadiens from Florida for a fifth-round pick. And one of my favorites, sarcasm, Dustin Penner went from the Ducks to the Capitals for a fourth-round pick, which I think that the Capitals overpaid, honestly, for that one. But anyway.
You know, I don't see – the Dustin Penner trade is a head-scratcher as far as I'm concerned for both sides, to be honest with you. Penner's a guy, as you know, I'm sure as a Kings fan especially, mm-hmm. he's a guy who can be tough to take.
Absolutely.
And he's had trouble fitting in some spots, but he actually did fit in well in Anaheim. Apparently he got along really well with Ryan Getzlaff. He played very well, for them in the playoffs. And, it's a bit of a head scratcher to me. You know, Anaheim had such a good thing going. You wonder why they would sort of break up the chemistry of that team just to get a fourth round pick. And from the Capitals standpoint, you know, the Capitals have some young wingers that are coming through the pipeline, and I don't think the Caps, are a win-now team, so I'm not really sure why that move, made any sense. So it was kind of one of those deals that I didn't think made sense for either side.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. And Penner's not getting any younger. He's already a pretty old dude, and he's a bit. And I know he's got the experience in the playoff and the playoff wins and all that, but geez, I mean, yeah, it's sort of a round peg in a square hole. Okay, let's move on with our NHL trade deadline recap with our friend Robert in Virginia, who you know him as Pitch and Catch at one point in time in the space-time continuum on the MikeFrancesa.com. So good to have you with us tonight. All right, so let's keep going. A lot of goaltender movement. Ilya Bryzgalov, he finds teams as much as goals find his crease. Now he's going to be on the Wild. He goes from the Oilers for a fourth-round pick.
You know, there's a couple of interesting things here. First of all, if Ilya Bryzgalov is, the answer, I don't want to know the question. but it also tells you, because basically it appears that Minnesota chose to acquire Brizgalov instead of acquiring Marty Brodeur from the Devils. Now, I don't know if that's because, you know, Minnesota just, you know, does, you know, they don't think that Brodeur can play anymore, or if Lou Lamoriello's asking price was just way too high. But, you know, I think Marty Brodeur is shot, but I would have taken my chances on one more magical playoff run with him before I would have made a move for Brizgalov.
Yeah, I don't know why anybody would trade for him, to be honest. That's that is a head. But, you know, there's room. There are rumblings that it was the Devils who kiboshed that deal anyway. So it may have been just a second. It may have been a plan B for Minnesota they did not expect to happen. So that's my only thinking of that. All right, so let's get to another goaltender move. Victor Foss, he was a Ducks backup goalie. He's now on the Oilers, so I'm assuming the Oilers would go to him. The Oilers can use all the help they can get. I think he's a backup to the Oilers, too, though, because Scriven's got just signed to a contract just the other day, and Scriven's doing a great job for Edmonton. So I think that's probably a decent backup move for Edmonton, but the picks that go back, I wonder if it's too much. What is your thought on this trade?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a third rounder and a fifth rounder, you know, for goaltending depth, it really is interesting the number of goaltenders that were moved this year. You usually don't see that much movement at that position in the NHL. So it's interesting to see just how many goaltending moves were made at the trade deadline. But he's a depth guy for them, and you know. A third and a fifth round pick. I mean, I guess with all the moves that Edmonton's made over the years in selling off their players, they probably had, you know, they probably had plenty of picks to trade away. So, you know, it may not have been as much of a loss for them as it would be for other teams.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, they have stockpiled quite a few. They've had many losing seasons in the last decade or so. So, no doubt that they probably had that move to make. It's sort of like having a foul to give in basketball. It's like it's a situation just like that. Speaking of defense, we also have a couple of defensemen switching teams. It's one went from the Stars to the Ducks, a pretty good defenseman, but he's hurt. Stefan Robidov went from the Stars to the Ducks, which is kind of a move that I suppose is nice on paper, but I'm not really sure what the real impact is going to be. Two reasons. We already mentioned he's still on the IR. His contract expires after the season, and the Ducks already play pretty good defense. I'm not really sure what this does other than bring veteran leadership. Your thoughts?
I think what it does for them is two things. Is one, like you said, it's a veteran. It's another veteran defenseman, and it's depth. The one thing, you know, that you see every year in the playoffs is you can never have enough depth on the blue line. And, you know, you have to play six defensemen, you rotate them in and out, and, you know, one guy gets hurt, now all of a sudden, you know, you're relying on your seventh and eighth defenseman. And, you know, we saw this happen to the Rangers a couple of years ago when they made their run to the Eastern Conference Finals. John Tortorella lost faith in his third pair of defense with Michael Delzato and, you know, either Steve Eminger and Matt Gilroy, and he essentially played four defensemen in the playoffs, and you can't have your defensemen playing those kind of minutes during that grind. So just, you know, if somebody's not playing well or if somebody gets hurt, it's always good to have a veteran that you can throw in the lineup, especially if you're a win-now team like Anaheim. You wouldn't want to see a cup run derailed because you didn't have enough depth on the blue line.
I think I would contend with your point that the Anaheim is a win-now team. They've got everything going now. This is the time. I think they've really got everything together. They should be expected to make a big, big run in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It is, even the division is so deep this year. It's crazy. You've got San Jose, you've got Anaheim, you've got my team, the Kings. Vancouver's in that division. We'll get to them in a minute. It's definitely if you can get some talent, get it. I think so. I think that part makes a lot of sense, Robert. Good, very good thinking. Okay, some other moves we will break down. I don't know. Do you want to comment any on Patrick Mullen or Andrew McDonald?
Well, only from the standpoint on Patrick Mullen that the Vancouver Canucks were attempting to to move, you know, some of their pieces, and they really weren't, you know, I mean, other than the goaltending, and that whole thing was a debacle with the way Mike Gillis handled that situation with Luongo and Schneider. But, you know, they wanted to move Kessler. They ended up not moving Kessler. And so this actually ended up being the only real piece today, you know, that they moved. And then the Andrew McDonald thing, you know, again, the Islanders, you know, as they do all the time, are selling off their pieces. And it seems to me like the Flyers acquiring Andrew McDonald was more of a precursor to a move that they made later on. Where they dealt Andre Mazaros to the Bruins, so they basically just brought on one defenseman to, you know, bolster, you know, that position because they knew they were gonna they knew they were probably gonna move Mazaros.
Oh yeah, look at that! You have that on the head. I see the Mazaros trade further up. Man, so many transactions. We're not even halfway through this yet. That's incredible. Okay, so with Robert in Virginia, and I'm Dave Medina, we're continuing to break down the NHL trade deadline. A lot of action, so up next, this is a move that I think we all could see coming. It was about time. It was only a matter of time before this happened. Roberto Luongo finally goes from the Vancouver Canucks to another team, and he goes with Stephen Anthony to the Florida Panthers for Jacob Markstrom, and Sean Matthias. So it's the end of an era for Vancouver. Luongo was their guy for a long time. It seemed evident that Corey Schneider was playing better than him at one point, and then he goes. And so I don't know what the deal is with the Vancouver goal. They've been having a really tough season. Torts on that team, I'm not really sure what he's contributed. It seems like he's almost made it worse. But you might know more about that than I would. Your thoughts about the Luongo trade?
You know, like I alluded to earlier, you know, I don't know how you go from a year ago having Roberto Luongo and Corey Schneider, you know, to now, you know, basically having two completely unproven guys. I think Mike Gillis botched that situation. And, you know, I just wonder if John Tortorella, when he took that coaching job, if he had any idea that, you know, that they were going to basically start breaking up this team and rebuilding. And you wonder if the Sedin twins, when they signed their contract extension, knew the same thing. I mean, you wonder if, you know, they knew that, you know, the goalies were going to get moved and that they were going to try to move Ryan Kessler, which didn't happen, but will probably happen over the summer. If the Sedin twins would have re-upped. But this looks now like a rebuilding project. And to me, Tortorella is the kind of guy who, you know, I would not have him there for a rebuilding project. I wouldn't have him there to coach young guys. I thought that was one of his weaknesses when he was with the Rangers. To me, Tortorella is the guy you bring in when you have a win-now team, you know, sort of like a Mike Keenan was, you know, when he came to the Rangers in 94 to crack the whip and get the team over the line, because he's a guy who's going to wear out his welcome in about 2, 3, 4 years. The players are going to be sick of him. They're going to tune him out, and he's going to be shown the door like he was in New York.
Yep.
So, you know, I just don't see that an incompetent GM in Mike Gillis and a rebuilding project is going to be a good mix with John Tortorella. I think that situation in Vancouver is going south really fast.
It really is. I mean, they did not plan that well at all. I really think that Luongo, if he was going to get traded, he should have been traded a year ago. I mean, it's just crazy. You know, you could have had a shot to maybe sign Schneider to a deal, and that would have been fine. I mean, he's younger, he was playing good hockey, and now you lose out. It's an unfortunate situation for a good fan base up there in Vancouver.
You're right. That would have been the move. The move would have been to move Luongo a year ago and then sign Corey Schneider and have him be the franchise goalie for the next 5 years.
Yep, it's really too bad. So now on to the franchise that does get it, the Chicago Blackhawks. They've bolstered their defense with a couple of defensemen coming in for a second-round pick, which goes the other way to the Phoenix Coyotes. David Runbald and Matthew Brisbois. I think I remember Brisbois being decent. I don't know what to say about Runbald, other than I can't pronounce his name. But do you think that the Blackhawks got better at defensemen?
Yeah, again, I think this is another one of those depth situations. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you have a win-now team. And just making sure, you know, it's interesting. I was listening to And by the way, great job out of the NHL Network for the first time this year, simulcasting TSN's Trade Center trade deadline broadcast all day long and making it available on the NHL.com website in the U.S. It had not been available prior to this season. So it was a good job by them. And I had a chance to listen to it today. And they had Ken Holland, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, on. And they said, you know, that he was rumored to be looking for, you know, depth on defense. And he said, yeah, so were 30 other teams in the NHL. And it just, you know, again, it's a, you know, anytime you have a win now team, you just, when you're on your way into the playoffs, one of the things that you try to do at the deadline is pile up as much depth on defense as you can. And, you know, the Blackhawks, certainly did that with this move here.
Yeah, I think it's good to see that they are continuously moving pieces in small spots, not drastic spots, because a team could very easily rest on its laurels. They could have rested on the laurels they had in 2010, but they didn't. They kept making moves here, getting better, looking for the right guy, and it's a good thing. It's paying off, and this is a team that just won the Stanley Cup last year. So they can sense when they need to make the move they need to make. So I feel like this is probably good for them because they are going to need the depth this year. You can imagine that some of the players on that team have already been so tired from all the deep playoff runs that they had over the last three seasons. So it definitely would be a nice infusion of fresh legs, I would imagine.
Yeah, and, you know, look, one of the things the Blackhawks do very well and why they're so successful. Now, the Pittsburgh Penguins were able to do this, too, to maybe a lesser extent. But they really, you know, they spend their big contracts on, you know, big-time players. You know, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith. And then they really have so much depth in their organization that they're able to bring in, you know, they're always able to bring up younger players on entry-level contracts to fill in around them on depth. And that's really the best way to manage, you know, today's NHL salary cap. Because, you know, if you are going to have superstars on your team, those superstars eat up a lot of cap space. You have to have depth in your organization, guys who are on cheaper contracts, but who can play to fill in around them. And that's the only way that you can really be a contender in the NHL these days.
Yeah, that's the recipe for sustained success. You might be able to have a one year run, you know, with a bunch of big names and what have you, but it doesn't carry over unless you continue thinking, well, stay one step ahead. So staying one step ahead, I think, in addition to them, we'll get to that in a second. But first, I want to get to a big trade that's probably near and dear to you, Martin St. Louis. Going from the Lightning to the Rangers, the question and all the talk in New York today was about whether they gave up too much to get St. Louis. In exchange, they gave up Ryan Callahan and two picks, a conditional and a first-round pick for next year, for, I think, 2015. So, wow, what do you think about the asking price? Was it too much? Is it worth the price? What can St. Louis bring to the Rangers, and what are you losing with Callahan?
Yeah, no, listen, this is a fascinating trade, but what I would say is that it was worth it from the standpoint that San Luis is a better player than Ryan Callahan. I just think he brings more in terms of offensive punch. I love Ryan Callahan. I have a jersey that's in my closet that's now going to move to the back of my closet. I was a big fan of his. He brought toughness, grit, leadership. He could play a lot of minutes. He can play in the power play. He could kill penalties. He was willing to sacrifice his body. But one of the things with Ryan Callahan is, you know, he's a smaller guy who plays like he's a big guy. And he was hurt a lot. He had durability issues. And even at age 38, Martin St. Louis is a more durable player. Ryan Callahan's missed more games this year than Martin St. Louis has missed since 2005.
Wow.
And the other thing is Ryan Callahan's asking price on his contract was just way too much. He started out, according to Darren Drager of TSN, last summer asking for 8 years, $60 million. I mean, I love Ryan Callahan, but he doesn't score enough goals to get that kind of contract. And even the 6 years, $36 million that the Rangers were offering, I thought was too much. So, you know, the cap savings, you know, San Luis is signed through next season at like $5.5 million cap hit, which, you know, the difference there will allow the Rangers to lock up some of their restricted free agents and an unrestricted free agent like Mark Stahl, who they need to get signed. They just couldn't afford to be locked into a big contract with Ryan Callahan because the team lacks goal scoring and Callahan wasn't going to do it. And I think Marty San Luis will give them, you know, another, you know, top-notch scorer so that, you know, if he's on a different line from Rick Nash, it really forces the opposition to pick who they're going to deploy, you know, their big-time defense pair. Are they going to deploy them against Nash's line or are they going to deploy them against Martin San Luis' line? It gives the Rangers the kind of scoring depth that they have not had in a very long time.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely a major deficiency. Scoring has been for the Rangers, so they'll take the help that they can get. It's probably, I'm going to really be interested to see, feel that one out. He's definitely talented, is St. Louis. We'll see how that goes this year and beyond that, too. Speaking of offensive boosts, the Ottawa Senators received one in the name of Alex Hemsky. That's an interesting call. They get him from the Oilers for a couple of draft picks. And I'll tell you what, the Senators look like they've had a bit of a disappointing year, considering that they had a big splash signing Bobby Ryan to a contract, and I'm not really sure if they've realized the potential that they expected to have. So Hemsky's a good pickup, but what do you think about the Ottawa Senators and their offense now with this trade?
Yeah, he'll add some offensive punch for them. Their problem is they've been giving up too many goals, which is, you know, surprising. You know, they've struggled in their own zone. They've struggled a little bit in goal. You know, Leonard and Anderson haven't played, you know, as well in goal as you would have thought they would. They still have some good talent there. You know, as you may know, I'm a big fan of Erik Karlsson, their defenseman.
Yes.
I think in the playoffs they'll still be a tough out if they can get it together in their own zone. But you know, Hemsky will certainly help offensively. Not sure how much he'll help in his own zone, but you know, it'll certainly help them put some pucks in the net.
Yeah, no question about it. Now let's I could go over the Canadiens' pickup of Devan Dubnyk, but I think it's basically just a fill-in. It's just a fill-in spot for while Carey Price is out in the IR. So maybe we'll get to that later on. Here's what I want to get to: Marian Gaborik, a player for which I'm sure you're familiar, going from the Blue Jackets to the Kings, in exchange for just some randomage. Matt Fratton, and I've seen him play. He's like a backup to the backup to the backup. He's probably like a fifth line guy. Second round pick, third round pick. This is a great move for the Kings. I can't say anything more about it. I mean, Gaborik, I know he's been hurt and he's probably, but man, he is a grinder. He is going to be a good asset for that team. It's a good fit for Daryl Sutter's system. I mean, this is a great, I wouldn't say slam dunk, but it's pretty close. I'm a big fan of this deal. You've watched him for years in the Rangers. What do you think about the move?
I think it's a good move. You know, the Kings were in a similar boat to the Rangers in that, you know, the biggest thing they were lacking was goal scoring.
Yep.
And
yep.
So, you know, I think this move does for the Kings, you know, a little bit what the San Luis deal does for the Rangers. Is it just gives them some more scoring punch, you know, because, you know, certainly the Kings play great defensive hockey and Jonathan Quick, like Henrik Lundqvist, you know, they're among the best, you know, in the league. And, you know, Gabrick's a sniper. He's a goal scorer. He's got a great shot, a great release. The only downside with Gabrick is durability issues. You know, if he can stay healthy, I think he'll be a good addition. So to me, I think the Kings did a good job. The one thing that strikes me about this trade is the Columbus end of it. Think about this. A year ago at the trading deadline last year, the Columbus Blue Jackets gave up Derek Brassard, John Moore, and Derek Dorsett to the Rangers to get Marian Gaborik. Gaborik then proceeded to play 32 games for Columbus and score 9 goals. And then they turned around and moved him to the Kings for Matt Fratton and 2 conditional draft
exactly.
picks, and they're paying half of his salary. That's just, I mean, that's just a terrible job by the Columbus Blue Jackets.
You know, it's funny because the last time the Kings made a trade at the deadline with Columbus, they got Jeff Carter. And he's just been nothing but tremendous
right.
for the Kings. He was the leading goal scorer for the Kings last season in the strike-shortened year. He had a hat trick against Nashville. I mean, you're giving up some pretty serious talent in these trades. I'm not really sure what their plan is.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. And they're basically collecting a bunch of Rangers cast-offs is what they've done. You know, now look, John Davidson is over there now, and, you know, he certainly did a good job in helping build the roster that the St. Louis Blues have. So maybe he can, you know, maybe he can help straighten things out over there. And they certainly, look, they caught lightning in a bottle with, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky, a guy who was cast off by the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, the Flyers, a team who haven't been able to find anybody to play in goal for them for 30 years. And, you know, now Bobrovsky wins the Vezina Trophy for Columbus. So, you know, not all of their moves have been bad, but in particular, just, you know, what they basically gave up and then got back with those 2 Gabrick moves was not one of the finer moments for their organization.
No question. It's and, you know, I felt like Columbus had little glimmers of them being pretty decent this year. We'll just have to revisit them in a little bit later. Let's get to this is one that I actually am very entertained by. This move, and we're getting into more goaltender movement. It's just everybody's moving in at goal. You won't even recognize the crease after a while. But Tim Thomas going from the Panthers to the Stars, that is a laugh and a half. Oh man, you talk about
you know what this move is about. This goes back to the Boston Bruins Stanley Vancouver Canucks Stanley Cup finals a couple of years ago when Tim Thomas was in goal for Boston and Roberto Luongo was in goal for Vancouver. The two of them got into a pretty nasty war of words during that series. And so I think the idea was once they brought in Luongo, they had to ship out Tim Thomas.
Yeah.
the two of them were not going to coexist on the same team.
I think this was
just simply a move to to get Tim Thomas out of there and bring in somebody who would back up Roberto Luongo.
That is absolutely on point. That is a very good point. You can't have there would have been the fights every night if it had stayed that way. They were smart enough to get rid of him. It was a good call. So now with Tim Thomas on the Stars, what do you think he can do? I mean, is he going to be? Do you think he would ever be good enough to be the starter again in Dallas?
Well, you know, goalies are an interesting thing. Even, you know, at an older age, you get, you know, guys who come back. I mean, you have a guy like, you know, Mike Smith in Phoenix who, you know, you sort of found his game in his late 30s, almost 40. So, you know, you never know. Anything is, anything's possible. But I don't know. I certainly think Tim Thomas's best days are behind him, and he's probably not going to be ever again a starting goalie on a team that's going to contend for a championship, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even heard from him in like 3 years, so I think that says all we need to know about him in recent times. But it was interesting because I was wondering how far away would he be from being a credible starter. It looks like he's probably still a couple steps off from that. Now let's get to the Islanders again. Vanek goes from him, and along with a 5th-round pick, to the Canadiens in exchange for Sebastian Kolberg, who I'm not familiar with. I don't think that's good news for the Islanders. What do you think?
No, listen, the Islanders are an absolute disaster. They basically moved Molson and then Vanek, and all they got back was a conditional 2nd-round pick. It's just a horrible job by Garth Snow. I don't know what he's doing. That franchise is lost, and you know, it's troubled times again, you know, out on the island. And I'm sure it's just a matter of a couple of seasons before, you know, we'll be talking at the trade deadline about the Islanders trading John Tavares somewhere.
Oh, I know. It almost seems like a lock at this point. Boy, that's gonna suck. Tavares is their
guy,
too.
He's a terrific player. But, you know, the interesting thing about Vanek, you know, to watch is, you know, we always talk about, you know, it's always New York is thought of as, you know, the pressure cooker place to play, right? You know, you get traded to the Yankees, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of pressure, you know, even in football, you get traded to the Jets or the Giants, or, you know, you're under that spotlight. But in hockey, it's Montreal. And, you know, Vanek is a guy who's played his whole career in Buffalo and now the Islanders. And it'll be interesting to see how Vanek adjusts to being under that sort of spotlight and that sort of pressure of playing in Montreal, and how well he fits into their, you know, very defense-first system. He's a very talented player, certainly should give them some offensive punch, but I'll be curious to see. It's a pressure cooker to play in Montreal, especially as a trade deadline acquisition when they, you know, have a chance to make a run in the playoffs.
And there are serious expectations every year from the Canadiens fans. It's a very big loyal fan base, but it, like you said, with it and with all the championships they've had since forever, there come big expectations. So you have it, and that will be one to watch. Speaking of,
they're the New York Yankees of the NHL.
They really are.
Their fans expect, you know, to win championships.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure the Montreal version of Francesa is like, it's been 21 long years since he won a championship.
That's right.
That would be fun. Good stuff. Former Montreal Canadien, Yaroslav Halak, gets flipped from the Sabres. We mentioned that earlier in the podcast. And now he's getting moved to the Capitals. This is actually great for the Capitals, I think. And in exchange, Neuwirth, who's pretty worthless, and then some other guy ends up going to Buffalo. Why did the Sabres not keep Halak? Did they feel like he was not going to be around for the long term?
Yeah, I think that was the case. I think it was a financial thing. And now this gives the Caps some goaltending depth. You know, Neuwirth had not been, you know, particularly good this season. And it just gives them some depth now, along with Braden Holtby, you know, in goal. And, you know, I think Neuwirth is, you know, someone who's a little younger and someone who, you know, the Sabres have, you know, because they're not looking to win anytime soon, you know, sort of have the luxury to give this kid a chance and let him play and, you know, see how he develops.
That might be good for the Sabres to get this team to gel, like the Nets, but get them to gel with all the young talent that they're going to get and the future young talent they'll get with all the draft picks that they have at this point. So it's definitely a five-year plan for Buffalo, and it's just a matter of whether that plan will go according to plan. Okay, any other final...
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. So any other transactions you wanted to comment on? I left out a few, but maybe there's some others that you may be interested to bring up.
Yeah, you know, just basically, it seemed like... you know, Anaheim and Pittsburgh were the two teams who were, you know, the most in on trying to get one more big scorer. I know both of those teams were in play on Ryan Kessler. Both teams were in play on Thomas Vanek. And so I thought it was interesting that, you know, Pittsburgh got some depth forwards in Marcel Gotch and Lee Stemniak. But no real kind of Jerome McGinley move like they made last year. And so I just thought it was interesting that, you know, Pittsburgh and Anaheim, neither of those teams really got, I think, the big, goal scorer that they were looking to add at the deadline.
Yeah, I must say. I mean, Pittsburgh is the kind of franchise that can make a splash, but the splash didn't come for him. So it's a pretty dry pond for him at the moment. I mean, look, nothing against
that. I would say those moves, you know, those lack of moves, and then just Boston getting Andre Mazzaros from Philadelphia on defense. You know, Boston's got a very, very young, you know, they were very, very young on the blue line. And, you know, it was pretty clear over the last couple of weeks that they were going to look to add a veteran there. And that was a good job. You know, the Bruins have been a very well-run organization the last, you know, several years. And, you know, another good job by them of getting Mazzaros to give themselves some a good, solid veteran on the blue line.
Yeah, I mean, the Bruins already were a big favorite to win the Eastern Conference this year. I think they've just gotten that much better, and so it really is going to be them as the team to beat. I mean, in the East, who would even be close to them at this point? I mean, I guess there might be one or two, but I'm trying to think, like, who would be number two, realistically?
I mean, look, Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh's going to be a tough out if Marc-Andre Fleury can get his act together. You know, and if one of those two teams, you know, if they falter, like, you know, a couple of years ago, Boston and Pittsburgh both got knocked out in the first round.
Right.
And, you know, the six-seeded Devils ended up coming out of nowhere to make the finals.
That's
and then,
right.
You know, they lost to the Kings, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing about the NHL playoffs. It's not, you know, the NBA, you know that, you know, the Heat and the Pacers, you don't even have to play it. They're going to be in the Eastern Conference final. And, you know, one of the top teams in the West is going to face one of those two teams in the finals. The NHL is not like that. Once those 16 teams get in the playoffs, almost anybody has a chance to get hot for a couple of months and go on a run to win a Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think Montreal, you know, certainly could do it. Toronto has the talent. I think if the Rangers come together, they could do it. You know, I think there's any number of teams. The Flyers have gotten hot right now if they can get their goaltending situation. Clearly Boston and Pittsburgh are the two favorites, but you know, I think the East is wide open. You know, and then the West, there's just so many good teams out West that you know, who knows what's going to happen there. That's going to be a steel cage match.
Yeah.
To see who comes out of the West, because that's, you know, certainly the cream of the crop of the NHL is in the Western Conference right now.
No doubt about that. I mean, I was just thinking about, you can, without even trying, you can come up with five teams that could easily make, not easily, but five teams that could absolutely make the Stanley Cup Final and have made the Stanley Cup Final. Chicago, L.A., Anaheim. Although with this group, they haven't really been in the Stanley Cup Final round yet, but they absolutely could. Yeah, there. Let me think. Well, Detroit's not in the conference anymore. It doesn't matter. They wouldn't have been in it. I was just saying.
Right.
Who else am I thinking of? San Jose. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And you know, that's a pretty good core group. It's a, like you said. I mean, I don't think there's an easy team in there.
No, St. Louis. You know, is in the mix there. I mean, there's a lot of teams. There's a lot of really, really good teams out West. It's going to be, I think the Western Conference playoffs are going to be a blast to watch this year.
I'm in on that. I mean, look, I certainly will have no, it'll be a thrill from start to finish. And that's good. I mean, it's, you know, we it's great when you get a lot of competition in the field. And so I think anybody comes out of there will be worthy. I'm sure we both agree there. All right, so that's our podcast recap of the NHL trade deadline. Again, would you say that this is the biggest trade deadline you can remember in how many years? I mean, like a lot of years?
Yes, yeah. I mean, the last couple of years, it's been kind of bland. The last couple of years, there's only been a little bit more than a dozen trades. Last year, there were really no big names involved in any of the trades. You know, to see Ryan Miller and, you know, Roberto Luongo, and, you know, of course, then, you know, the Ryan Callahan, Martin St. Louis trade, there were just a lot of big moves this year that we really haven't seen in the last number of years. It was, and it really wasn't just today. It was really, you know, it was really sort of the 2-day trade deadline bonanza that we had. And you know, if you're a hockey fan and you're into this sort of thing, the last couple of days were tremendous.
Absolutely. That was a lot of fun to track.
And really, it, you know, it comes on the heels of, I think, what's been a really good stretch for the NHL. You know, you had you know, the Winter Classic, and then you had the Stadium Series games, and then you had the NHL players featured in the Olympics, and now you had, you know, a tremendous trading deadline, and this is all leading into what should be a really outstanding NHL playoffs. The TV ratings are up, you know. Now, I mean, you know, let's not underestimate Gary Bettman's potential to screw this all up somehow. But this has really been a solid couple of months. Excuse me, it's been a solid couple of months for the NHL.
Absolutely, provided there is no screw up by Bettman, if we lock him somewhere in Barbados, maybe that won't happen. But we look forward to the good rest of the year. I feel like it's going to happen. So, Robert in Virginia, really great to have you back. And thanks again for coming on and breaking this all down with us. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of the season, too, if you would.
Thanks, same to you. Really appreciate you having me on. And maybe we can do this again around the NHL playoffs.
Absolutely. Let's do it. All right. So that's Robert in Virginia on the show. Thanks again, Robert. Really a lot of fun. We're going to actually take a quick break. We'll do a top of our ID, all the good stuff. Come back with a random questions hour and much more coming up. So, Dave, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Dave in the City, Locks of the Week Radio. It's 8:16.
is Dave Griffin. You're listening to Locks of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
And it comes time, we know how Lincoln dies, you know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they're showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic, chanting USA.
Actually, this full day was a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
No one puts the WGCs in the Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major prank, so chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just MA. And
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good-looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a... body shot off her, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Back at it in the city, 8:21 tonight on an extended... extended first hour. We had a great time with our friends Chris in Syracuse and Robert in Virginia. Good to hear from him again after some time. Now we go into hour number two. So Kevin on the Cape will not make it tonight. He's getting better. Thankfully, I've kept in touch with him. He's doing all right. I mean, he's been worse, but he's certainly not 100%. And he's not in position to really speak at this point. He says his voice is really more of a whisper, so it would be really tough to hear him, he was saying to me. And so we certainly wish him the best of recovery as we continue into the next week. And I'm feeling pretty good that by next week he will be back and ready to go and ready to do randoms. And I'm sure he's looking forward to it. So hopefully, wherever you are, Kevin, if you're listening to this program tonight, I'm glad to hear that you're doing all right. Continue to get better. I look forward to hearing from you again here on the program. So right now, we'll just go it alone on America's favorite moment in sports talk podcasting.
To the dance. It's time for random questions.
Good stuff.
In the city. Without. On the
Yeah, it's not the same without Kevin, but... But the questions will be the same tonight because we have a lot of great contributors at blogtalkradio.com/Dave in the City to send them to us. So if you have another question for us too, call us at 424-258-9251 and we'll continue to take your questions all night long. So they can be verbal, they can be written, they can be telepathic, although I'm not equipped enough to really get them. But we'll go through the remainder of this show, the 36 minutes we have left, with the random questions tonight. Some good ones already in the box. Let's check it out. Here we go. Our first question tonight comes from Mike in North Jersey. He asks, what is Henrik Lundqvist the king of? Oh, ho, ho. A salvo from the Devils fan. Well, let's see. He's a king of Sweden. He's a king of the crease. He's a king of advertisements. He's a king of clothing. I would say he's got some kingly abilities. The only thing he's not a king of at this moment for sure is the LA Kings, because then that would require a trade, which I don't think the Kings really need at this point. So that Henrik Lundqvist has some kingly traits to him, but not everything. All right, that's a good question. Next question from a couple quickies. He asks, forgetting the value, just from juice within a sport and the talent standpoint, would you rather own an NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, or European soccer team? I mean, forgetting the value, I guess, of how much it costs. It's kind of weird to use Euro soccer in there because it means you got to be in Europe. You can't have a Euro soccer team in a different continent. That doesn't make any sense. But let's say that you were in London and you had that choice, and then you could make a Euro soccer team, and that's a good get. But I think I don't know enough about European soccer to really have a beat on how much of an impact it really has within the rest of the city. So for me, I think the answer is NFL team, because the NFL is the biggest sport. It would have the most obvious financial impact on a city, assuming that ownership was able to handle all the construction costs for the stadium on their own. If they tax the city for that, then that's a different story. But let's just say that they took care of all that. The resultant revenue for NFL, the juice you get during the playoffs, I really think that's going to be the winner. So I think NFL would be the winner in that one. MLB would be a good choice too. You get a lot of loyalty with it too. NBA is definitely on the list, but I think NFL is going to rise above the rest with this particular question. Next question. Can we do a WrestleMania podcast? Yes, vidcast. We can do WrestleMania vidcast. Apparently, I am told it's going to be around April 2nd. So I think that means we're going to do that the week of March the 28th or something like that. Some other time around there. Do a podcast that week. Get our most distinguished WWE experts on for the program. And we'll have a ball. I think that'll be Leo and Clever, ACQ, UCH. I'm sure there's a little birdie. Everybody's invited. And, you know, WrestleMania can sometimes have like 30 people in the ring. I feel like we could do the same thing with our podcast. So I don't know anything about WrestleMania. All I'm going to do in that one is ask the questions and let everybody else drive the bus. But that'll be a fun one. I look forward to that. Yes, we will do WrestleMania. Okay, next question. Without Kevin on the Cape, I'm Dave Medina. Kevin is recovering. He should be back next week, hopefully. I miss him. I really do. I sometimes I think about like questions that he would ask me when we were doing the podcast, and it's not really the same just to do the questions and not hear his response at the end. So clearly, it would be a better spot if he was here, and it will be, and he will be, and it's been. So I'm tired. You know, it's been a been quite a week. A very eventful week here in Santa Monica. Time's changing, weather warming up. Good time. So let's get to the next question, random questions tonight. Quickies asked a question about WrestleMania. John in Georgia asks the next question. He asks, what is the most unintentionally funny movie you've seen? Something that was supposed to be a serious movie, but it was so bad it made you laugh. Oh, that's out there, man. That's totally out there. I'm trying to think. Oh, man, there are movies like that. I know. I mean, Rocky IV actually would be a candidate for this, but it was a good movie, too. Like, it was unintentionally funny off the charts, but it was also a good movie. I kind of enjoyed it. It's a guilty pleasure, I think is what you call it. So that is on the list. But in terms of bad movies, oh, I know there have been bad movies. So bad. So bad. I'm trying to think. You know, if I had seen the movie, it would be The Room. That's a big one. Everyone talks about how unbelievably ridiculous it is, and it was supposed to be a really serious film. So that's a good one. Boy, that is a great question, because usually I try to avoid bad movies, so that's why it doesn't happen a whole lot, but I know it's out. There are others that I'm sure were supposed to be really like serious or interesting, and they were just bad, like unintentional humor off the charts bad. There are moments when I chuckled at American Flyers, but not quite on the level that I would imagine for this question. So what else? There's some choices in there for sure. Swim Fan is just outrageously stupid. That's a good one. Oh, man, that was dumb. Okay. All right, that's like maybe that's your answer. All right, I'll get back to that one a little bit later. That was a good question, though. Okay, next question. All right, here we go. All right, this is from Quickies. Best pair of tits you've ever seen. Whoa, that's a loaded question, because it's like, it's changing. The question changes all the time. I mean, oh gosh, tough question. I think, I mean, do we go real or unleaded, so to speak? You know what I mean? Like, do we do, like, authentic or do we do, like, boosted? I'm not really sure. I guess Jennifer Love Hewitt would be on there. Salma Hayek would be on there. Yeah, oh my god, yeah, yeah. Let's see. I think those are like my two right now. I'll probably go with that. There's others, but I don't have time to think about it right now. Those are great choices. They are. Okay, next question. Does a wedding need to have to be a big time wedding? No. I think it depends on the person. The ones who want the big time weddings, it seems like the women want the big time weddings more than the men do. I think if it were up to us, we would just have a wedding at our house or something, or in a church. Maybe have like 50 people attend and that's it, you know? It would go in 20 minutes, you have the ceremony, it's tremendous, it's classy. It's simple, and it's great. Usually, the other side of the coin, you're ending up looking for giant ballrooms and huge events, lots of decorations, many, many guests, limos, carriages, all sorts of stuff like that. So, it doesn't have to be a big-time wedding. It just depends on the person, I think. Some people like it, some people don't, and that's usually how it goes. Okay, next question. What magazines did you read as a kid? Well, let me ask that question to you guys. What magazines did you guys read as kids? I would like to know. You know, it's a funny question because the magazines I read as kids were archives. Like, my mom used to keep all the old magazines from the 80s. Almost all of them. It was really a great historical perspective. Like, when I was about 10, I would go into the closet and I'd see all these old People magazines. Did you know that People magazine used to have only the cover in color and the rest of the magazine was in black and white? Did you know that? That blew my mind. I'm like, only the cover was in color? It's like, that's crazy. I mean, it didn't seem like much of a stretch to put the rest of the pages in color too, but they never were. It was always just something I never really knew about. But that was a really fun magazine to read. And it's saying it's really just too bad that they're all gone. My dad is such a, you know, he loves to clean stuff out. So he forced, or he threw them away or something else happened and they're gone. They were long gone. And that's really too bad. If I was 10 years older at the time, I might have considered a way to keep them. Because those were tremendous historical documents. They weren't even that big. I think it was like a couple boxes, you know, nothing more. They were pretty good. And it was really interesting to read those magazines. So People was one I read when I was younger. Sports Illustrated, same idea. My dad would keep all the Sports Illustrateds from the 80s, like in these boxes. And so I read the older Sports Illustrateds from like, at that time, like 5 to 10 years ago. And so it was really a lot of fun just reading through those archives, look at the pictures. Sports Illustrated was in color the whole way, I think. I think most of the magazine was in fact in color. So that was pretty cool. So those two were the magazines I read in my youth. In terms of actual subscriptions, I think I remember, well, there was Highlights for Kids. There might have been another one. I just can't remember the name of it. And I was big on GamePro. When I was a kid, I didn't subscribe to it. But that was a magazine I totally read as a kid. I read GamePro a lot. GamePro was a big one. PC Magazine. And then I had PC Gamer. Those were the three I read when I was like an adult. And I was like becoming, when I was in my teens. Like those are the sort of tech, sort of gaming magazines. A lot of fun. So those were the ones I liked. And I guess after that, you know, everything went online. I didn't really have magazines anymore. Except for the swimmer magazine I get because I'm a master swimmer. And that's it. So, all right. Here we go. Up next. No, it's actually one. Somebody brought, I think John and Georgia brought a Mad magazine. That is a good one, actually. I do. My mom kept those. We never got rid of those. The Mad magazines she had from her years as a youth are still intact. And they were, those were pretty good magazines, so I we keep those. That's good stuff. Okay. All right, next question. All right, if you have a question for us, write the word question followed by the question itself, and then I'll just continue to answer these as much as I can until I run out of steam. And I think the way this is going, I might run out of steam in about 10 minutes. So if you've got anything for us, let me know, and we'll be happy to answer them throughout the rest of the hour. Last fight you saw on the street. Last fight I saw on the street. Yeah, you know, and I think I tune them out, so I'm not going to have an accurate answer for you, but last fight I saw on the street. Boy, I don't know. Let me think. Like people actually throwing punches? Okay. You know what? No, see, this wasn't on a street technically, but it was in a bar. I remember I was at the Penthouse Bar in Santa Monica with my buddies, Coach Andrew Jacobson, and a couple of friends of mine, and a friend of ours that we had who was in town, and he was a wild one. He had this big old entourage. We went with him, and I don't know if he got involved in the fight or some other people got involved in the fight, but we were all there, and a guy like smashed another guy with a bottle in this bar, and everything stopped. It was like those old Western movies where they stopped the music and everybody looked over there, go, you know, it's kind of like that. And you kind of looked over there and you saw a guy who was like rubbing his head because he got hurt. Someone got punched in the face. That was the last fight I saw. That was about maybe 4 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I think that's when that happened. So that was a wild time. That was crazy. All right. So next question comes from UCH, Umberto's Clam House. Now, he said he wrote a question above. Let's see what it is. Are there three worse movies in the past 15 years than the Star Wars prequels? Try to name a worse movie. It's hard to find one, I'll tell you that. There were a couple that came out that were really bad. I remember there was one that had like a 9% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, a comedy. And it was just so bad, I can't even remember the name of it, but that was really bad. I remember that movie. Ninja Warrior, or maybe Ninja Guide, no, Ninja Warrior, I think the name of the movie was. That is to this day the last movie I remember actually walking out on. And there may have been some great action sequences, but the rest of the movie was so slow. It was so slow and really just not well written. So I was done with it after like an hour and I left. So no offense to people who like ninja artistry and all that. Because, I mean, the ninja sequences were great, but there weren't enough of them. They had like one really good one at the beginning. And then it was just so much exposition and it just was so bored with it. I had to go. So I think that if there is a movie that could have beaten out Star Wars for the worst movie of the last 15 years, that was in there. Other than that, I mean, I can't remember anything else that stands out as being that bad. Because those movies were bad. Those movies were really bad. So if you have some thoughts to that, feel free to share with us on the blogtalkradio.com/DaveInTheCityChatroom. All right, next question. From Quickies, he asks, most underrated and overrated SNL cast members? It's a highly subjective question because my answers may disagree with other people's responses. But in terms of underrated, you have to say that Garrett Morris is probably one of the most underrated cast members of all time. I mean, he was one of the original primetime players. And for number one, they just didn't know how to use the guy. And that's just unfortunate. It was a product of the time. But it was just ridiculous how they just had no... He was so talented. He could sing. He was really funny. And yet they just kept pigeonholing him in these stupid stereotypical stereotypes. And I just thought it was just so, you just got a raw deal. You got a really raw deal. Dude was great. Is great. And I guess he fought some issues with drugs down the line, but I mean, in his day, he was really, really good at comedy and theater. It sucks that he didn't get more of a shot. I always felt like that was a big problem for me. you know? I mean, I don't even think Lorraine Movement is, like, even half as funny as he was. And she ended up getting all sorts of roles, too. And so, I don't know. That was sort of my thinking with that whole thing. Other underrated cast members, I tend to put Daryl Hammond in there because he was glue, man. He had so many different roles. And he's not going to get the kind of celebration that you see with, like, Will Ferrell or even Sherry O'Terry. But, man, he was glue. And he was glue for a long time, like nearly two decades. So he definitely really underrated, really, really underrated. I honestly think it was pretty terrific. Pretty terrific, funny. His impressions are so good. So that's a good one. Now let's just get to the overrated category, or else I'm going to be here all night talking about SNL. Overrated cast members. Chevy Chase, a numero uno. He is not that good. And I remember people treating him like God in the late 70s. But he was funny. It's just that he wasn't as funny as people would make him out to be in retrospect. I mean, look, listen. It was nice. He could fall down the stairs and say live from New York once in a while every night. But I think that if he actually stayed on the show for a couple years, people would have gotten tired of him. I felt that way. He's got some iconic roles, no question. And I agree with that. But in terms of literal humor, I don't think it was really as great as it seemed at the time. And that's sort of my opinion. I'll probably stay by that for the time being. So I felt like he was a bit overrated. I can't say Tina Fey's overrated because of her writing ability. Her writing was terrific, so I'm not even going there. That stays as is. Other overrated characters. I'm trying to think of a couple other ones. Going through the history books, you know, I thought Joe Piscopo might have been a little overrated. I don't think he was bad, though. I enjoyed a lot of his characters. I enjoyed his sports guy, commentator guy. I enjoyed a lot of that. But he really kind of couldn't do anything else. Like, he was kind of stuck doing the same, like, two or three roles. Like, he could do Sinatra, and he could do the sports guy, and then I think one other character. But anything else he tried to do Reagan once. It didn't really pan out. It wasn't really that great, so I think he might be a little overrated. He got into a little bit of a... He kind of felt a little slighted when Eddie Murphy started getting on the pub, but I guess when you really look back, it's like, yeah, you know, Eddie Murphy really was that good. So it's sort of a little bit of that. I mean, it wasn't right. It wasn't right that Eddie Murphy upstaged the rest of the show that one time when he hosted it himself. You know, not originally, but they had to... He was forced into that role because one other guy couldn't make it. And so, that whole story, I'm sure it's documented somewhere. That wasn't right. I mean, you don't upstage your entire show, the mouth that feeds you. That was kind of not a smart move. And obviously, there have been real problems and between the two since for that reason. But Eddie Murphy was that funny. And I don't know if Joe Piscopo really had the same level of funny and versatility that Eddie Murphy did. So I'm putting him on the overrated list. Others... You can't say Dana Carvey, because if you ever see Dana Carvey in stand-up, I mean, he will make you roll on the floor. He's really funny, so I wouldn't say that. And then going into the current decade, well, you know, one could have said that Jimmy Fallon was overrated, but think about all the things that he did, his contributions. Think of all the characters. It's a riot. I don't think you can do that. I think he's legitimately pretty funny. So, That's my cursory sampling of overrated, underrated, and then just rated. Pretty much anyone else in the not ready for primetime era was perfectly rated. Like, everybody pretty much hit their spots. It was really quite a special time, I would say. That's about all the time I've got on that question. Let's go ahead and get to the next one. All right. You know, you could put Dennis Miller on that list. Has he ever really made you laugh, really? I enjoy his style. I enjoy his personality. There's a little bit of it, man, the smarminess of his, and he wears it as a badge. At least he owns up to it. I think you can respect that. Is he really funny, though? Does he really make you laugh? He does once in a while, but not to the level that I think his reputation may suggest. So maybe you put him in there. And the other thing is, he couldn't do anything else but do the Weekend Update thing. And I think that's okay. Because Norm MacDonald took that and he ran with it. He was great. So, I don't think that's necessarily a problem. But I can't remember really laughing really hard at something that he specifically did. So that would sort of, that would be my contention with Dennis Miller. But he's a funny, in not a literal ha-ha funny, but a funny in a peculiar kind of way. Funny kind of guy. And he's his own man. So I do respect, well, he's his own man, but he sold out too, like at the turn of the century he did. But regardless, anyway, he's an interesting personality, but I wouldn't say he was necessarily that funny. So I know I'm kind of stuck with that, because if he wrote a lot of the sketches that happened to be funny, then I had to retract that, because obviously he was great in that arena. So let's just put a to be continued on him. Next question. All right, next question. Here we go. Here we got some good ones. Okay, Panther Shock has another question. He's Mike in North Jersey also, and he asks, had the Russians won a gold medal in hockey, you mean this year? Okay. Had they won the gold medal in hockey, would they have still invaded Ukraine? No. It wouldn't have made any difference, I don't think. Okay, next question. Do you think the guys in the Blue Man group get a lot of pussy? That's a good question. Because I happened to be recently at the Monte Carlo Resort and Hotel in Las Vegas. And that currently is the home of the Blue Man group. They live there at this point. They're doing shows there every day, every night at Monte Carlo. And they do get around in the casino, I must say. They do the procession, I think at 6 o'clock. They have their show. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of been a while since we've heard from them in the public eye. Do they get a lot of a poutang? I think they do. And I think what they can do is they can start banging a drum or something like that and make people very, very interested. So that's a good question. I think the answer is an affirmative on that. Next question. What's the best steak you ever had? You know what? I keep changing my answer all the time. But in the beginning, I would have said the best steak I ever had was the New York strip I had at Nick and Steph's Steakhouse downtown LA. Then I would have said, well, it's actually the steak at Mastro's. And then I would have said it's the steak that I had over at Wolfgang's, the one that was fashioned a lot like Peter Luger's. If I ever had the chance to actually go to Peter Luger's in New York, that's gonna be my answer. If that day ever comes, that's going to be my answer, because I know everyone's told me left and right how great it is. I went to Wolfgang's here in Beverly Hills. It's a lot like it, and I was so mesmerized. I love that steak. But for whatever reason, the second time around, it didn't quite have the same kind of char. For whatever reason, it was still pretty good, but it didn't have that. It didn't really have that or that sensational experience that I remember the first time. But I know that whatever that was, Peter Luger's Steakhouse would have taken that and elevated it to another level. So I think I'm sort of answering the question in the future. But I think Peter Luger's will be that steak once I actually get there. I honestly believe that. I really think that's going to be the answer. But today I think I'm going to say Mastro's is the best steak I've had. And they do a really good job. And they've got a number of different cuts, which are pretty good. And they have a location in Beverly Hills. They have one in Arizona. They have one in Orange County, which I think I've been to. They have one in Vegas, which amazingly I've been to that one too. But they're very good. Really good. Mastro's steak, you can get the filet, big fan. You can get the ribeye, big fan. They don't miss. I mean, all their steak cuts are really good. In fact, everything they have is good. The sides are good. The potatoes are good. The lobster is good. I mean, their lobster mash, I've tried that once. Just tried it. It was really good. Just once. I tried it. I didn't order it. I just tried it. From someone else ordered it, and I tried it. It's fantastic. I need not say more. Mastro's, great steakhouse. Okay, next question. Here we go. Let's see. Any other questions? Oh, I'm getting a word from our friend Quickies that Peter Luger is overrated. Overrated, huh? Okay. You know, I am certainly not an arbiter of all steakhouses in New York. I'm also told that Bobby Vann's is really good. I gotta check that out too. You know, it's weird. I didn't think to check out steak when I was in New York the last time. Because I said, whatever steak they got, we got steak just as good here. And I still feel that way. I still feel that way today. Because I feel like I could go to Cut. I could go to Boa, like right around here in Santa Monica. I go to Ruth's Chris. I could go to the aforementioned Nick and Steph's. I could go to Houston's. I could go to Mastro's. And I really think that all those places would have a really, really good steak that would be just, you know, top 5% of all steaks in the area. It's really good. I mean, it's really good. So I feel like, what would they do in New York that would exceed that? And I'm thinking, because it's the same meat. It's the same New York strip, raisin, corn, and all that. And so I feel like, would there be a point in wasting a meal on a food that I can get back home? And that's my only contention there. The only exception would be Luger's, because it's a very differently prepared kind of steak. I mean, nobody else does steak like that in LA, except Wolfgang's, which I mentioned already. So, and Wolfgang's is a derivative of Luger's, because the guy that runs Wolfgang's Steakhouse, as you know, was a former waiter at Peter Luger's. So it's a natural dissension. Pretty neat, isn't it? So, okay, anyway, next question. Favorite NES video game? Oh, yeah, I think you go with the classics. Super Mario Brothers. I think for a while I was switching off between that and Super Mario 3. But the difference is Super Mario 3 gives you so many extra lives, it cheapens the game. So it's technically superior, graphically superior, and it is superior in a lot of ways. But all the power-ups and the warp zones and the many extra lives you get in that game. You can walk into like 15 extra lives without trying. That can't, to me, it cheapened the experience. It's just like, well, I've got like as many lives as I want. I just keep trying to save the princess. Super Mario had a little bit of a heightened impact. It was a simpler game, and there was less going on. Like, it wasn't so busy. And I think that's why it endured for so many years. It was such a great game. And there was not as much of a safety net, so there was more risk involved with every jump, with every Koopa that you stomped on, and so you were always on your toes with that game. And the other game, you're still on your toes, but it's a little bit more exploratory and a little less risk. I mean, it's still so many levels, so it's kind of hard. It's still hard either way. Getting to actually finish the game in Super Mario 3, really hard. But you never feel like, oh man, this is it. I guess I got to start all over. Because you get like 88 lives by the time you get to the level 8. So it's a complicated question, but I think Super Mario 1 would be my answer. And I grew up in that game too, so that's my favorite NES game of all time. It endures. I think a lot of people would also agree that Mario would be among their favorite games when it comes to NES. Alright, next question. Who will win the WGC Cadillac Championship this weekend? Ooh, good one. Good one. Good one. Good question. That's from Mike in North Jersey. He wants an answer so that he can rule him off of his fantasy roster. And I did say Adam Scott was a big favorite this weekend. And I think he'll do it. I think he's going to do it. He's one of the more consistent guys on the tour. At least with a putter. I know he didn't do so great last week at Accenture, but this week at Doral, I think he's got this. So I think he will be the winner of the WGC Cadillac Championship, and that starts tomorrow. So that's a good question. All right, we'll take one more question. Have I ever had a shaved head or crew cut? Yeah, I have had a shaved head. I have, but not like shaved to the skin, but it would be shaved as close to that as you could get. It happened to me one time. I got a picture of it if you want to see. It looked really weird. I kind of was like, Did I get sentenced or something? Is it like THX 1138? I don't know. No idea. But it happened one time because I just was so... my head was getting so hot because it was hot outside. And I decided, let's just shave the head. See what happens. And it shocked a few people, and I think people were like, oh, wow, okay, that's nice. But then when the hair grew out again, everybody's like, oh, yeah, your hair looks great. Oh, I like your hair. So it was not a popular look, so I won't do it again, but it did happen once. Well, that's it. That's all the time we've got tonight. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate you bearing with me tonight in lieu of the junk man with the random questions. And my thanks to our guests, Chris in Syracuse and Robert in Virginia. I'm Dave Medina. Have a great weekend. Enjoy all the sports. We'll see you next time.